It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll take stock of a new survey of American fears and find out what's on top of the scary things list for you.
First, a federal judge has denied a petition by the American Civil Liberties Union to expand which forms of identification would be accepted as legal voter IDs. The ACLU asked that technical college IDs, out-of-state driver's licenses, and veterans' photo IDs be ruled acceptable at the polls.
Joining us now to discuss the impact of this decision is Andrea Kaminsky. She is executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Andrea, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So this ruling says, no, we don't have to add these acceptable forms of voter ID. Is this something that you think is going to have an impact on people here in Wisconsin?
Well, the League of Women Voters did oppose the voter ID law to begin with. We didn't want it to be passed, and then we challenged it, as did the ACLU and other groups. But now it has gone into effect, and of course now we turn to educating voters and trying to make sure that everybody who is eligible to vote has that opportunity. But the ACLU, so we believed that the law to begin with will have an effect, and what the ACLU was trying to do was just amend the law, have certain parts of the law ruled unconstitutional, because the courts have said that law is constitutional. However, it's the most strict voter ID law in the country, in that it only allows a very short list of IDs to be acceptable IDs for voting, for getting a ballot and having it counted. And so we're trying to, the ACLU was trying to expand that list.
Well, let's look at the individual forms of ID they were trying to add on. Technical college IDs. Now, I think campus IDs can be acceptable if they meet certain criteria. It seems like technical college IDs are a gray area. The judge said they haven't been excluded specifically, but it's not clear that they're included as acceptable forms.
And that's exactly right. And the Government Accountability Board took that up, and they felt that two-year college ID should be acceptable, but some people don't think so. And so that is a gray area. And, you know, we look at that and we think, well, why wouldn't they be acceptable? It says a student ID from a technical college is a government issued ID. It has the student's name and photo. Why should it not be acceptable? Why should there be preferential treatment for four-year students rather than two-year?
And another form was out-of-state driver's licenses. As I understand the ruling, the judge says the state doesn't have to accept those as voter ID, in part because there's a remedy. Anybody who can get one of those can get their U.S. passport and use that as their ID.
Well, not all of us have a passport. Not all of us have a driver's license. But the purpose of the voter ID law is simply to say that so that the poll official, the poll worker, knows that when I walk in, that I'm the person I say I am. And my name, I've already established when I registered to vote that I am a state resident and I'm eligible to vote, and I've already established that. And so all they need to do is know that I am the person whose name is in the poll book. And it would seem that any official ID with a name and a photo should qualify.
Talking to Andrea Kaminsky from Wisconsin's League of Women Voters, looking at a ruling on an ACLU lawsuit over voter ID in Wisconsin, not a challenge this time to the concept itself, but looking at particular forms of ID that under current rules and under this ruling will not be accepted as valid forms of ID. The third main form, Andrea, that this was looking at was veterans' ID. So what's your reaction to that not being accepted as a form of ID at the polls?
Boy, that's the one that is most incomprehensible. How somebody who has served in the service, they've made that sacrifice for our country. Why, and that's it's a government issued photo ID. Why would that not be acceptable? I can't imagine. And so you know, what the ACLU was trying to do is make these acceptable IDs.
Now, looking ahead, as you mentioned, voter ID is the law of the land. It will apparently be in place for elections in 2016, and there are going to be a bunch of them. So what are you looking for now when it comes to implementation and making things work as smoothly as possible and making sure that people who should be able to vote can vote?
Well, the first thing that we want to do is educate voters. We've got a government accountability board that has developed a lot of great materials. Some groups like ours, like League of Women Voters and ACLU, have developed great materials. The Government Accountability Board does not have much of a budget with which to get those materials out and that message, but we need to educate every eligible voter in the state. And so we do have good materials on our website, and what we need is for everybody who, for people to talk about it. You know, don't assume that your relatives who are living perhaps in another part of the state or whatever have an acceptable ID. There will be some people who think they have one that will work, and it will not. So people need to know that there's a short list of acceptable IDs, and they need to know what to do to be prepared to vote. And if they don't have an ID, they can get one for free from the DMV, but that takes some time, and again, they need to know how to do that.
So you're hoping people don't find out that they can't vote with their ID on election day, I imagine. What do you recommend people do if they're not sure? They have something in their wallet, they're not sure it gets them into the polls.
Sure. Well, they can go to the official Government Accountability Board website for voter ID, which is, it's called Bring It to the Ballot. It's bringit, B-R-I-N-G-I-T, .wi.gov. And they will get all the information they need there. If they go to the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin website, there are some great brochures on there, or just flyers. They're not complicated pieces at all, and they tell you not only how to, you know, what kind of IDs are acceptable, but also how to go to the DMV, what you need to bring if you need to get an ID.
You referred to the existence of the Government Accountability Board. It currently exists. It may not come election times next year, so we could be implementing this photo ID with something different, a different election body than we have now. What are your concerns regarding that possibility?
That is a huge concern. We believe this is not the time to be changing our top election agency when we have big elections next year and a new voter ID law that will certainly cause some problems for some people. So, first of all, we hope that doesn't happen, that there isn't a change. But besides that, it's just going to make it all the more important that people, start now and get this straightened out if they need to get an ID. It may take some time.
We've seen challenges to voter ID itself go through the courts. They're pretty much done. We've seen this ruling yesterday regarding forms of ID. Is there more coming in the courts when it comes to voter ID? Are we pretty much done seeing these cases now?
Well, it is possible that the ACLU could appeal this ruling. This was in the federal district court in Milwaukee. They now could take it to an appeals court. I don't know whether they'll do that, but that would be the main change. The other thing is that we can be talking to our legislators about maybe amending the law, making it a little less strict. I understand that the legislature we have now wanted this law, and that it's going to be difficult to change it. But to talk about these three types of ID. That would be a relatively small tweak to the law, and it really would make voting more accessible to our veterans and to other people in our state.
We'll leave it there. Andrea, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Andrea Kaminsky. She's Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. She joined us to discuss the federal court's decision to deny an ACLU request to expand forms of voter ID here in Wisconsin.
Coming up, the Survey of American Fears is out. At the top of the list, government corruption. People are really freaked out about that, it turns out. Well, what about you? What are you most afraid of? This is the spooky month, the time to think about such things. You can call us starting right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post your fear on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. October is Manufacturing Month here in Wisconsin, and businesses, schools, and state policymakers are trying to send a message: help wanted.
With an aging workforce, manufacturers are looking for young, skilled workers and trying to get the word out to millennials in the workforce and people kicking off their college careers.
Steve Benchwall joins us now. He's Director of Business World at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Steve, welcome to the show.
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, one part of the effort here seems to be about changing what people think about manufacturing jobs. You all have a video out of college students talking about their experience in factories. Here's a few of the voices from that.
Expectations are really, they're not right about manufacturing.
Everyone still pictures the manufacturing plants from the 18th century where there's smoke everywhere, it's dirty, you're covered in tar, I'm not that dirty, and I've been working all day so far.
It's not just sitting down doing just one thing, all day. You're constantly moving around no matter what you're doing.
So what do maybe younger people coming into the workforce need to know about what a manufacturing job is like these days, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the most important parts, is getting the kids up to speed and educated. But it's not just about educating the kids. We got to expose people of all ages to the info, and we'll probably touch on that in a second. But for the kids, for those millennials, what's so important is at least making them aware of their options. I think we've become all kind of guilty of pushing way too many kids towards a four-year university, which is an awesome place for plenty of kids to continue their education and match them up with their career. But there's a whole lot of kids that aren't even aware of the awesome opportunities that are waiting for them in manufacturing careers right here in Wisconsin. And we see a lot of interesting efforts all around the state this month by businesses and technical colleges trying to get kids, parents, teachers into those facilities and highlighting those awesome careers that are waiting for them.
How important is manufacturing in our state's economy?
Well, it's absolutely our most important job sector. Not only does it employ nearly half a million people, but it's also the multiplier effect that every single manufacturing job is going to generate jobs around it in the supply chain or the transportation network. So it's extraordinarily important to our future here in Wisconsin, certainly looking forward over the next 20 years or so.
Are we seeing younger workers, new graduates, not even thinking about this line of work these days?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're not thinking about it. There's some awesome, efforts that are going on in the state to change that perception. But I would argue that we're certainly not doing enough to get those kids aware of what's going on, what's available to them. And it also has to do with the teachers that are in the classrooms teaching them and the parents at home. A lot of those parents need to know, too. They care about that son or daughter. They want what's best for them. A lot of parents out there see maybe a four-year university as security, as a safety net of sorts, that it's going to line them up with a career. But if we can tell the story the way that we should, a lot of times you're going to go to school for half the time, 2 years to a technical college instead of four. A lot of times you can find an employer that'll pay that tuition for you, either entirely or in part. And quite often there's a job waiting for you at the other end. So if you presented that story to a parent and said, half the education, half the tuition, possibly zero debt, and a job that's averaging about $55,000 a year coming right out of school, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. And I think that's a story that we need to keep telling to as many people as we can.
As older workers retire, are we in a state where manufacturers are having trouble finding the skilled people they need?
Yes, big time. If you talk to a manufacturer right now, that's probably the first thing that they'll talk to you about. If it's not a workforce crisis right now, that's certainly where we're headed. One of the things that we're doing at our foundation is a project called Future Wisconsin. And in a nutshell, we're looking 20 years ahead and where are we going to be? What are the issues that we're going to have so we can start tackling those today? And one of the takeaways, one of the headline statistics, is over the next 20 years, we're going to add almost 1 million people, about 800,000 people. 95% of those are going to be over the age of 65. and less than 1% will be in the 18 to 45 demo of working age people. And that's a huge, huge deal. If it's a problem now, it's going to be an absolute crisis if we don't do something about it, you know, starting now, looking forward over the next decade or two.
It's Manufacturing Month in Wisconsin. We're talking to Steve Benchwall from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about efforts to bring especially younger workers into manufacturing jobs and getting the education system, businesses, the state government on board with that. So, Steve, talk about the kind of skills and training younger workers would need to get into these jobs. As one of the people in your in that video said, it's not like it used to be, these manufacturing jobs. What are they like? What do we need to know?
So, you know, kind of the old stereotype was that a factory job, you know, you'd hear of the three D's, that it's dark in there, it's a dirty job, and that it's dangerous. And maybe even that it's for dumb people, right, that we don't think of this as a job that we hold up on a pedestal, maybe like we do coming out of a four-year college with a fancy degree. But the reality is that these are bright, well-lit factories, air-conditioned, million-dollar pieces of computerized equipment in there. It is absolutely not what the popular stereotype kind of from yesteryear would hold. And there's some absolutely awesome careers. If you saw the video, you played some clips from it, you can see the energy in those kids as young millennial employees about where they work and how proud they are of the work that they're doing.
Yeah, but what kind of coursework would one of those students need? What kind of skills do they need to develop to have a shot at these jobs?
Sure. So there's a whole variety of careers you can come out of a two-year technical college with. Things like CNC operator, machinists, welders, and those would be specific to degree paths at the technical college. One of the exciting things that we're starting to see is from some of the more proactive companies that they'll be donating machinery and equipment to high school tech ed classes so that kids can come through high school, get hands-on training, get some classes, maybe even get a certification before they head off to that two-year technical college. As one of our more active businesses, business members pointed out, the business support isn't about just putting your name on the scoreboard anymore. It's much more about being very, very active and involved, hands-on with the students, with the teachers and the curriculum, so that those high school kids get hands-on exposure in high school, a two-year tech college, and then they come out of those programs ready to go for their manufacturing career.
Are a lot of technical colleges and other campuses, maybe the two-year campuses, maybe even four-year campuses, getting on board with programs like this?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you really see it coming together in October. It is Manufacturing Month, as you've been pointing out. And if you notice on our website, we kind of have a calendar of all the efforts that are going on between the technical colleges and some of the other partners. And it is a huge, huge list of things that are going on and people, what they're doing statewide to kind of get the word out about how important it is to value manufacturing in Wisconsin.
Are we seeing more things getting students out of the classroom into either on-site factory simulators or actual factories themselves, not just the coursework?
Yeah, and if you talk to the manufacturers that are the most active in kind of this forefront of, hey, we need to change the perception, we need to shift the paradigm, what they'll tell you is that the onus is on the businesses to reach out to the schools, to reach out to the teachers, and get those kids into the factories and into the facilities. Sometimes it's not possible if there's health issues or regulations, and it's not a safe environment, obviously. But a lot of times it's possible, and it can be a sacrifice. It's going to take time and sacrifice from those businesses to make it happen. But it's all about changing the paradigm, and it doesn't happen if you don't get kids and then the adults in their lives as well into those facilities so that they're not just hearing statistics, they're not just hearing about it, but they're seeing it firsthand and really changing those stereotypes and perceptions.
I've been talking a lot about after high school. Is there much outreach going into the high school level? Does there need to be more?
I absolutely think that there needs to be more. It was the point that I kind of made earlier about how parents really just want what's best for their kids, and if they don't have the information to draw on, they might not see manufacturing as a safe, secure career that it truly is. You know, you're going to school for less time, the job placement is much more probable, and the salaries are about $10,000 a year higher than than an average college graduate coming out with a bachelor's degree.
Steve, I know in your job you work a lot on issues of millennials in workplaces. I know it's easy to overgeneralize about different generations, but are there things that that manufacturers, that employers need to know about millennials that would help get them into the job and to stay on these jobs?
Sure. There are an awful lot of stereotypes out there about millennials, right? Not all of them are always necessarily the most positive. I think some of the things that employers might want to keep in mind is a lot of times with this generation of kids, they might be lacking some of the interpersonal skills, professional experience, and I think that's a result of maybe not having as much job experience growing up through grade school, through high school. So I think to the extent that businesses can really train the millennials when they first come in the door on what are the expectations of working here, how do I need to dress, how do I need to look, how do we interact with customers, what's acceptable behavior, so that there's nothing kind of lost in translation, and it's a good placement on both ends.
We're talking to Steve Benchwall with Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, talking about efforts to bring younger workers into manufacturing jobs here in the state.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you training to get a manufacturing job? If you've been in that line of work, would you recommend it? If you're an employer, are you finding the skilled workers that you need? And maybe if you're involved with a program at a university or a technical college to develop these skills, call and tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now with Steve Benchwell from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, looking at efforts to bring millennials into manufacturing jobs here in Wisconsin.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. As an employee or an employer, can you make the case that younger workers should consider jobs in manufacturing? And if you're a millennial, have you pursued a manufacturing career, or considered and rejected it, or is the idea completely off the radar for you? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Go right to a caller. We've got Jeff on the line in Waupaca. Jeff, hi.
Hi, how's it going? The shop I work for, we've been bringing high school kids in. We start off with the shop class, bring them through on a tour, and we've been having them come through, and we have probably right now, I think we have 10 high school employees that come in throughout their day, either early in the morning or later in the afternoon, and do some work around our shop and kind of get a feel for what it's like in the shop.
And do you get the sense, Jeff, that some of them are going to pursue careers along these lines?
Oh, yeah. We always, at the end of their term that they get out of high school, we've hired at numerous ones. I know at least 7-8 of them that have been hired on full-time now and enjoy doing it. And the biggest thing, I've been doing this for 30 years now, and the biggest thing I try to let these kids know as I'm showing them and getting them around is, you know, think of any art project you've ever made in your life. Is it ever as cool as some of the stuff we're making? And look at these big machines and these big cool toys we get to play with to make them. You know, it is. It takes creativity. It takes imagination. You know, I didn't realize how important that was in high school and stuff for the kids, the art classes, the music, to get that creativity and that imagination. That, I think, right now in kids is probably one of the biggest things I see lacking, trying to train them to see something, look at a piece of metal and see a finished part out of it.
Interesting. Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. And Steve, you mentioned the soft skills earlier, of course, the technical skills. Does creativity need to be part of this training process?
I think so, absolutely. You know, we do a program called Business World, where we go out around the state and work with high school kids, and it's kind of similar to the TV show Shark Tank, if any of the listeners are familiar, but picture that with high school kids, where they dream up an idea, dream up a product that they're going to make, manufacture, and then sell, and get that creativity flowing. I think that's a huge part of the equation, definitely.
And his business, Jeff's business, goes right to high schools, brings some of the students in there to do work on the shop floor.
You bet. And you could hear in his voice, at least I could, how he has a passion and an excitement for what he's doing. And it almost sounded like they have fun over there when they're working with those fancy machines and cranking out really neat products. I could see high school kids really wanting to be a part of that.
Jeff, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. We'll go next to Paul in Two Rivers. Paul, hi.
Hi. I operate an agency online that helps high school students track their work-based learning. And I've talked to a lot of business owners. We have corporate sponsors, including the Volt Company, And they've told us that they're always looking for that next generation of high-quality employees and get engaged. So it's not just the manufacturers who are scrambling to engage these youth. And at an earlier and earlier age, the DPI is going to have all schools provide academic and career plans for students in 6th grade through 12th grade coming up in a couple of years here. And so we really are working on it very, very hard.
Paul, that's really interesting. I want to ask you from where you're sitting, if you had a message to the students themselves, maybe in high school as they're thinking about getting into the job pool, given that there's employers out there looking for them, what should those students know to make themselves ready for those jobs?
Well, I think the soft skills was mentioned, you know, lacking interpersonal skills. I think a lot of the students are very, very good. And what I do is actually I interface with the students through a website directly. And what I'd like to see is more businesses putting their logos on the website. And so when students click on that, they could see the kinds of jobs that are going to be available now and in the future. And so the students could start sorting it out. They need to think ahead and make a plan that suits their lifestyle and their goals. And all that's going to just come with more information being provided directly to the student.
Paul, thanks a lot for sharing that. Steve, what do you say for younger people, whether they're considering manufacturing or they don't know where they want to go? Where should they start looking?
Right. Yep. And I work with about 2,000 millennials every year through Business World. And one of our big messages, one of our takeaways that we really try to drill into the kids and hope that they take home is it's okay to not know what you want to do. Because quite frankly, that's most kids. That's most people, right? We kind of find our way as we go. But what we do know is that no matter what job you have, whether you're in manufacturing or you're a teacher or you're a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to need to be able to interact with people. You're going to need to be able to write. Going to need to be able to read and absorb content. All those skills that you're getting in English class, math class, that whole well-balanced education, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's very, very true. A lot of times we'll hear employers say that we don't so much hire somebody that has experience in this field. We hire a good person. We hire the right person, and we can give you the training. We can give you the info you need. But what we can't give you are those skills that you bring to the table, you know, how you interact with people, how you do your work. Are you accountable? Are you on time? Those kinds of things.
Thanks a lot for that call. As we talk to Steve Benchwall from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, it's Manufacturing Month in Wisconsin, talking about efforts to get millennials, younger workers, students to think about careers in manufacturing. Back to our callers now with Ben on the line in Madison. Ben, hi.
Hi. I was just curious about job security. What if things get sent overseas or they form a union and the union gets busted, things like that, because historically, sometimes those jobs aren't that secure, even if you're skilled.
Ben, thanks a lot for that call. And Steve, yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot over the years about decline of manufacturing in the United States, in part due to outsourcing. Do you think that's a negative? Is that something that students should be thinking about?
I think it's definitely something that we need to all be aware of, and it certainly is an issue. You know, that's something that can affect you in just about any profession that you are in today, such a global world, right? But I think some things to highlight, some things to remember are what the manufacturers, the companies, and the tech colleges and the high schools are able to do now is best match up curriculum tracks with careers that they know are going to be in high demand. We've got manufacturers right now that are members of WMC that tell us we have 10 jobs that are open right now waiting to be filled. And the only reason that it's 10 and not 20 is because we need to fill those 10 first. As soon as we fill those 10, we're going to post 10 more. So there are certain areas where there is very, very high demand. We know there's going to be demand moving forward because these are companies that have a track record of growth and that's projected moving forward, not to change in certain industries. So making sure that you're in an area where it's a little bit more job security and your teachers and instructors at the tech colleges and high schools are doing a great job of lining kids up with those kind of careers.
Thanks, Ben, for that call. Steve is with us next in Montreal. Steve, hi.
Good afternoon. I want to say that Hurley High School is in their second year of machine tool training, numerically controlled machine tool. Teaching you how to program, how to run the machines, right there in high school. And if there's a problem, it's that parents don't realize the availability of this education and where it can take them.
Steve, thanks a lot for that call. As you have said, Steve, this is getting pretty common. As we wrap up, what kind of message do you have for parents, hoping that they'll take advantage of that kind of program?
Sure. I think that the message for parents is, you know, what you want for your kids hasn't changed. You want job security. You want them to have a career that they take pride in, that they're happy about. And quite frankly, the manufacturing story, the manufacturing career path, hasn't been highlighted enough, and it needs an upgrade. You know, it needs a 2015 makeover to dispel all those myths and stereotypes. And that's what's going on this month. So no matter where you are in the state, if you reach out to Manufacturing Month Wisconsin, I'm sure you'll be able to find local programs or local opportunities where you can get some more information, maybe see a facility firsthand in your own backyard, and make sure that you're taking that into account as you're helping guide your child's future.
Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Steve Benchwall, Director of Business World at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, talking about Manufacturing Month here in the state, efforts to get millennials into manufacturing jobs. Keep sharing your thoughts at the Central Time Facebook page. How long have dogs been humankind's best friends, and where did those first dogs come from? New DNA research adds some clues to a question that still hasn't been completely solved.
Researchers at Cornell University checked out the DNA of over 4,500 purebred dogs and another 500 plus what they call village dogs that run free near human communities. The answer that they came to, modern dogs are descended from domesticated wolves in Central Asia, maybe near Mongolia and Nepal.
This and other research suggests that it all started about 15,000 years ago. Wolves, people starting to adapt to each other around human settlements. But still other research has said, no, yeah, that happened, but it was the Middle East or Europe or Eastern Asia. So I don't know, the DNA is starting to put it together, but still a lot of open questions here.
Right. Domesticated wolves, though, that fact always sort of blows my mind.
I know.
Little Fido is related to a wolf.
It's amazing the diversity in this artificial selection, right? I mean, Chihuahuas and Mastiffs and everything in between, they're all the same species. And your choice of dog? Winston.
Winston, the dog.
Winston,
I haven't
the hypothetical
yet.
Dog.
One day, right.
One day
there will
be.
I like dogs, though. I'm all for all dogs.
And you'll go to the source, Central Asia. Winston, the Mongolian hypothetical dog, will be yours someday.